news, weather, truth, and fun. We're iHub Radio, homegrown in the Coachella Valley. For a fresh take on the news with Anita Rufus. You won't know if you don't listen.
Okay, thank you so much for tuning in. This is Anita Rufus, the lovable liberal, here live on Sundays on iHub Radio from 10 to noon. A few weeks ago, I did a thing. I got this bug to look into something. You know how much I care about the meaning of words. And it drives me crazy when people are throwing around terms that they're not defining or that they don't understand what it actually means. A different discussion for a different day when we want to talk about the word socialism and Bernie Sanders. And okay, different subject, different day. But the one I did a few weeks ago was about the word autocracy and the concept of an autocrat. And in my blast this week that I sent out, I prefaced it by saying, whether you are a Republican who thinks Democrats are just trying to destroy this presidency, or whether you are a Democrat who thinks Republicans just want to destroy constitutional checks and balances, they want what is known as a unitary executive. Whichever side of that you are on, we're going through something right now in our political history and in our nation's cultural history that is not something to just be kind of fluffed off like, oh, well, it's just the latest thing that he's doing to get ratings or the latest thing that's coming out of Washington to try and stir people up or, God forbid, even the fact that it's the latest thing coming in over Russian podcasts pretending to be American news shows that are making people believe things that have no basis in reality. And there's a lot of that going on, too. But with all of that Sturm und Drang, with all of that, look over here at this shiny object. Ooh, have you thought about that? You know, every week I always end the show by saying there's a whole lot of stories about things going on that nobody's talking about that I call things you wouldn't know if you didn't listen to this show. But what's happening right now out in full bloom ever since the president feels completely exonerated by having been not found guilty by the Senate in his impeachment trial, with all of that, the president is on what is obviously some kind of a retaliation tour, if that's what you want to call it. He's bringing back some of the old people that used to be at the White House before he ended up getting rid of most of the people that were in the White House who had any idea about how to run the White House, how to do the things that are appropriate to do. But it has occurred to me this week, having been looking into this concept of autocracy, that the president seems to think he was elected head of the world, like the emperor of Earth. And I'm not sure that he is learned enough with any real historical understanding of our system, how it works, why it's supposed to work that way. He doesn't have that kind of grounding. You know, I have often said he's not stupid, he's ignorant. There's a big difference. But he seems to think he was elected head of the world. Now he's at it with Boris Johnson. After the whole Brexit thing in England, where Trump thought Brexit was just a fine idea and thought that he and Boris Johnson, both of them having one thing in common, well, two things, big mouths and crazy hair. But Boris Johnson was like the one buddy he knew that they would get along after Brexit, because now that England has broken away from the rest of Europe, Trump feels more comfortable. Well, now Boris Johnson is at it with the president. He postponed a White House visit that was supposed to take place next week because evidently last week they had a furious phone call. and the relationship has gotten tense. Johnson's plans to visit the White House while the British Parliament is in recess were apparently shelved, is the way they're putting it, after a contentious telephone call last week. Trump abruptly ended a call with Johnson after accusing Johnson of, get this word, betrayal. One of Trump's clear motivating activities or states of mind is based on the idea that he is being betrayed. By God, if you're with him, then you're with him. So he accused Boris Johnson of betrayal for ignoring American warnings and pushing ahead with allowing that big Chinese giant tech company, Huawei, to take a role in the United Kingdom's 5G phone network. So just for the record, supporting them in breaking free doesn't mean that you now get to tell them how to run their country. And when you don't understand just simple things that you claim to be the expert at, like negotiation, which requires some tact, especially in international relations, you can't just tell people what to do. Now he's upset with Boris Johnson. What do you think will happen next? Well, they're going to be negotiating with us about trade agreements now that they've broken away from Europe. Stay tuned for whatever is going on with that. And I mentioned this idea. I kind of threw it out there as if it were a joke. It's not a joke. The Russian influence on our culture and on our upcoming election. Last month, something called Radio Sputnik, which is an arm of the Russian government that is focused. They, you know, every organization has its mission. Radio Sputnik's mission is to sow doubt about Western governments. They started broadcasting on three Kansas City area radio stations in prime drive time when most people are tuning into local radio. Now, those behind this deal are saying, well, it's just a matter of free speech. Well, really? Do we allow free speech when it is coming from a foreign government trying to influence us? Well, of course, I suppose other governments could have said that about Radio Free America. Now, here is something I did find interesting. I just talked to you about Radio Sputnik. Oh, and the fact that the Russians are now pressuring the United States in Syria. We have still about 500 soldiers in the northeastern part of Syria, supposedly to fight the Islamic State and to guard oil fields. And Russian military have had run-ins with U.S. troops on highways in that region, despite the fact that they had all agreed that the two forces would stay kind of clear of each other. You got Russian helicopters flying closer to American helicopters. I mean, in just 3 months, 800,000 Syrian people have had to flee their homes because of that civil war. And here's the key. Think about, okay, we've got some problems with Russia and Syria, and of course Russia is fighting a live war in Ukraine, and Russia is trying to influence our election, and they're putting all those little feelers out to try and influence the world away from believing in Western democracy. And now, Republicans, this is a survey that was taken, a legitimate survey. Republicans and Republican-leaning independents are now, get this, 21 points more likely than Democrats or Democrat-leading independents to express confidence in Vladimir Putin to do the right thing in international affairs. 31% of the Republican identifying individuals in this survey, 31% had confidence that Putin would do the right thing versus only 10% who thought, well, no, it shouldn't go there. And now, the president, who is so upset about what has been going on with those who had the gall to respond to legitimate subpoenas from Congress and go and sit down and testify and tell the truth about what they heard and what they saw and what their concerns were with regard to the whole impeachment hearings. Now, Donald Trump has said he may decide he doesn't want to have aides like experts in the country he might be talking to. He doesn't want to have aides listening to calls he has with foreign leaders, like that infamous Ukraine call. He said he's considering ending the practice of allowing aides and officials to listen in on calls with foreign leaders. He says that's what they've done over the years. When you call a foreign leader, people listen. I may end the practice entirely. Now, here's why it's important that we have people on those lines. First of all, the experts in the White House are supposed to be giving the president the talking points for the points they want to make and the end results they want to try and accomplish out of that phone call. You don't just call up Kim Jong-un and say, oh, hi, how you doing? There's a reason that foreign leaders talk to each other. And those reasons are usually laid out. Well, at the end of a phone call, the people who were on the call, including very often the internal experts on those countries and the politics of those countries and the reality of the leaders of those countries and the support they might have or not have with their own people, those are the kinds of things that give perspective to whatever was said on that phone call so that notes can be taken and memorialized and saved as part of the official records of a presidency. This is important stuff. But the president doesn't like the idea that somebody might criticize whatever it was that he said. But of course, he doesn't read his briefings or listen to the people who are trying to tell him anyway. So now that he's getting rid of so many people, if only sycophants and yes men are left, how does government work? It's supposed to be there for us. It's supposed to be providing the services authorized by the Congress and funded and administered by the executive branch. If you're going to march out all the people who don't agree with you and only put in people who do, how is that not moving us toward autocracy? And isn't that something we ought to be concerned about? This is Anita Rufus, and you are listening to The Lovable Liberal on iHub Radio.
From Palm Springs, she calls it as she sees it. Local talk that's moving the needle. Here's Anita Rufus on iHub Radio.
And again, I thank you so much for joining me every Sunday live from 10 to noon here on iHub Radio. Today is February 16th. I hope you had a happy Valentine's Day. And if you'd like to participate in the show, phone number here is 544-8255. 760-544-8255. Or you can email studio@ihubradio.com, or you can even text 760-699-0202. So I'm talking about the fact that I, a few weeks ago, talked about what autocracy meant. And it is, you know, look, I'm basically a Pollyanna. If you know me at all, you know that I'm always trying to find the silver lining. I'm always trying to figure out a way to bring people together for some greater purpose than whatever they're fighting about. I've often said that I think the biggest problem going on right now, even within the Democrats who are running for president, is this fighting about how to get it done rather than focusing on what the outcome is supposed to be. Something people can get on board with and then have the argument about how you're going to get there. But as I said, if only sycophants and yes men are left in government, how does government work? Well, as it turns out, in flexing his muscles after being not removed from office by the Senate, you not only had Colonel Vindman marched out by security out of the White House, along with his twin brother who did not testify and was guilty of nothing except being the guy's twin brother. Both marched out of the White House. And if you've ever lost a job where they sent security to walk you out, you know what that feels like. I've been there. But there's more to come. And some of it has already happened. You got a senior Pentagon official in danger of losing her nomination to a top Defense Department position because she questioned the president's suspension of aid to Ukraine after that phone call, or before that phone call, when he was trying to pressure Ukraine to announce that they were going to investigate Joe Biden and his son. She was due to have this top Defense Department position. And the fact that she questioned, why are they holding up that aid? She is in danger of losing that nomination. A prosecutor who was involved in the case about Roger Stone lost a nomination to a senior Treasury Department position. She was a federal prosecutor. She was involved in the case where a jury found Stone guilty. And by the way, all this bull about, well, you know, the foreman of the jury was a Democrat. Are we going to start restricting who serves on juries based on their party affiliation? Or how about based on race or age or how much money they have? We all know that that's absurd and unconstitutional. And Stone had a lawyer. All the lawyer had to do was say, hey, I want that juror taken off. They get the names of the jurors in advance in a trial like that. They can look up all this background. They had to have known that this woman was a Democrat. And so what? A key official on the National Security Council is facing dismissal. And in fact, dozens of career officials are being transferred out of the White House, particularly out of the national security apparatus. So this is based on this deep state that Trump believes is entrenched in Washington, and they have only one purpose, and that's to defeat his presidency. And he wants greater control. Because he does not believe that the government employees are loyal enough to him. Not to the Constitution, not to the law, both of which they all take pledges to. He's repeatedly railed against law enforcement, especially even within his own FBI and Justice Department, for targeting his associates. Well, his associates either pled guilty or were found guilty. Michael Flynn, Michael Cohen, Paul Manafort. But the president says the real crimes were on the other side. Because in his mentality, how can somebody be guilty of a crime against him if they support him? If they were doing it for him? He said he even attacked Judge Amy Jackson, the judge who is presiding over the Stone case. He said, that judge put Paul Manafort in solitary confinement. Not even Al Capone had to go through that. And it was a false version of her role in whatever that was, as well as in his treatment. He suspects the people around him, even some of his own political appointees, are secretly working against his interests. Well, let me tell you, Psychology Today has something to say, not just about the president, but more particularly about the Trumpers who, no matter what he says or does, will continue to go off the cliff for him. I'm going to get into that right after this break. This is Anita Rufus. You are listening to iHub Radio. I'm here every Sunday live from 10 to noon.
News, weather, and a couple of dozen loudmouths. This is iHub Radio. She calls it as she sees it. Now, here's Anita Rufus.
Again, I thank you for joining me live on Sundays, 10 to noon here at iHub Radio, 760-544-8255. I want to talk about what I personally, and you know, I'm not an alarmist, never have been. Yeah, sometimes things are just totally crazy and you wish you could figure out how to control everything. You can't. I don't care how prepared you may be, how smart you may be, how aware you may be. Reality unfolds regardless of what you know or think or would like to have happen. We can manipulate reality once in a while. We can use reality to try and make happen what we want to happen. But reality doesn't care what you think. It unfolds regardless. And yet there are lessons to be learned. Lots of lessons to be learned. You know, they say if you're not aware of history, you'll just keep doing the same thing over and over again. And this is true in our own lives. I am convinced when it comes to relationships, whatever it is that gets in the way of one relationship and it falls apart, if you don't figure out what that was about, you're just going to go and do it all again. It's just the way we are as human beings in the current status of our evolution. You've heard me say it many times. We are barely out of the slime. But we are where we are. And the United States has had a prestigious position in the world because for over 240 years, we have been a democracy that has tried to live up to our Constitution, which includes checks and balances that hold in place three branches of government, each with the ability to have oversight on the others. So no one branch of government is prime. And now we are in a position where our democracy is literally being threatened. And I'm not an alarmist. I am a student of the law. I loved law school. And I love the fact that the Supreme Court and other federal courts, but particularly the Supreme Court, has tried to interpret what the Constitution means, either in terms of where the mindset was at the time the words were written, or coming forward to the fact that there are things going on now that the framers could never have anticipated. Like electric light bulbs, for God's sake. But we are at a time where not just the United States, but the world is in a state of flux because of the environment or because of wars or because of individual leaders who don't care what happens to their people as long as they can maintain their own situation and have land over which they can control what happens. Regardless of what the reasons are, a move toward populism, the fact that so many people of the world are on the move and needing to have places to go because they can't go back to where they came from. there are threats to democracy. And the thing that I have always been proudest of about the United States, you know, there are a lot of things that weren't perfect in the Constitution. We've had some amendments. We've tried to live up to our own aspirations. We have tried to keep ourselves honestly in sync with those aspirations as they were written out, to continue to expand what we understand about what it means to be human and to try and rule together. We are right now facing a serious threat to our democracy. And as frightening as that may be internally, and as much as people say, well, we're going to have another election, you know, no matter what happens, no, I've said it myself, no president's going to destroy this country even in 8 years. But it won't be the same country it was when they started. And there is a threat to our democracy and our position in the world. What's going on right now in this country is being used by autocratic leaders in other countries, like Vladimir Putin in Russia, to say, hey, you think the United States is so great? Look, they can't even live up to their own democracy. There's a book that was put out by a Yale historian. His name is Timothy Snyder. It's called On Tyranny. And he says democracies don't die all at once. They die slowly, in phases. He said among the lessons for people to defend their institutions are, at the very least, we must defend the concept of an independent judiciary. Because anyone who thinks we are not becoming an autocracy under this president, and by the way, I don't even think it's because he thinks it's a great idea for us to be autocratic. He's just who he is. And he sees his power as making him capable of deciding who's in and who's out. He doesn't understand what he is doing because he doesn't really understand how government works. So we are rapidly losing our moral compass when it comes to the rule of law. And when an autocratic leader controls the courts, let me tell you what that looks like. In Venezuela, which is often held up as, well, we don't want to become Venezuela, President Maduro said that authorities have not yet detained the opposition leader Juan Guaido, the guy who was invited by the president to come to the State of the Union address and who has been recognized by the United States as the legitimate leader of the people in Venezuela, but who is not the president and hasn't been able to take the presidency. Maduro, who is the president, said they haven't yet detained Juan Guaido because the courts haven't ordered it yet, but he said it will come. He made this remark in a meeting with international press 3 days after Guaido returned to Venezuela from the U.S., and he had also been to Europe. And Maduro said, the day Venezuela's justice system decides that Guaido should be imprisoned for all the crimes he's committed, then he will be jailed. That's what an autocratic leader is able to signal. And our own president says, those people are the ones who committed the crimes. They're the ones who need to be put in jail. And it appears that his imperial presidency supporting Attorney General Barr is trying to give him what he wants to keep some peace in the government. But even Barr had to say this past week, stop tweeting. You're making it impossible for me to run the Justice Department. So we do have some people who are resigning in protest. But how does that help? For Trump, that just means more people he doesn't have to fire. Now, after his impeachment, a lot of people were saying, well, did he learn anything from going through this impeachment? And a couple of Republicans, including Senator Susan Collins from Maine, said, well, I hope so. But it doesn't appear that he has. I think that he is absolutely feeling his oats because he keeps saying, well, I haven't interfered in those cases yet, but I have the absolute right to do whatever I want. Now, you got to really hear that. Because that is a dangerous thing for any leader of our country to be able to say. For him to have that view of his own powers, I have the absolute right to do whatever I want. And why wouldn't he think that, given the circumstances of what has happened over these last couple of weeks? Now, with regard to what he has done in office, a lot of people say, well, you know, look how wonderful the economy is. Well, look, you know, he's gotten our troops out of Syria. Well, yeah, that's all true. However, there was a wonderful article in Psychology Today asking, are we living in a time of dystopia? And I had to look up dystopia because I have a concept in my head of what that means, you know, things like Mad Max movie backgrounds. But dystopia literally means an imagined state or society in which there is great suffering or injustice, typically one that is totalitarian or post-apocalyptic. It says true dystopias are distinguished in part by the fact that many people inside them don't realize that they're living in one, because we are adaptable enough to take even absurd and inhuman premises for granted. We feel that elements of our own system are dystopia-ish, whether it's the reality television star in the White House or the surveillance devices that are always in our hands. People can track where we are just based on the fact that our cell phone is on. The drugs and suicides going on out in the rural areas of our country. How sterile our rich big cities are. It's possible that an outsider would look at the way we live right now and judge it as dystopian. So you want to know how a despot governs? I told you about the guy in Venezuela who says, well, it's just a matter of time till I get the courts to get Guaido into prison. In the Philippines, President Rodrigo Duterte, who is one of those guys that Trump has said, yeah, you know, he's cleaning up the drug thing by killing people. Duterte told the United States that he was scrapping a two-decade-old defense agreement. 20 years we have had a defense agreement with the Philippines called the Visiting Forces Agreement, which allows for joint military exercises and gives U.S. defense personnel and equipment movement within the Philippines. Duterte is unhappy because the U.S. has criticized his human rights record, and he is seeking closer ties with China and Russia. That's what a despot looks like. That's what an autocrat does. He's also trying to shut down the country's largest TV network in the Philippines because he doesn't like what they've said about him. This is Anita Rufus, and this is iHub Radio.
because you only think you know the truth. Striking blows against the corporate talk radio monolith in the Coachella Valley. iHub Radio. Participation encouraged, but not required. Here's Anita Rufus.
Okay, I'm talking about autocracy and the fact that a country can slide into losing its status as a true democracy, and that we have always held out that model to the world. We don't always live up to our own aspirations, but we keep trying. Well, a lot of my friends, a lot of you who listen to the show, who agree with my politics in general, you may be more liberal than I am, or you may be a little more cautious than I am. But you know that I honestly believe that there are a group of people out there who are never, no matter what evidence they see, no matter what they hear, no matter what the reality is that is presented to them, they are never going to abandon Donald Trump. And I've given you some of the reasons why over previous shows. For example, I told you about my girlfriend who stayed married to the wrong guy because she didn't want to admit that she had been that wrong. And there's a lot of voters who supported Trump who don't want to have been wrong. Now, how they vote in the privacy of the voting booth, I don't know. But there's a lot of Trump supporters who will profess to the death. They don't care what he does. They love him because they don't want to have been that wrong. There is another group of voters who want to say F you to whatever they see as the establishment, and Trump is more than happy to be their voice and to even use that kind of language, although I haven't heard him say that word yet. But there's a lot of parents who won't even let their kids listen to a Trump speech because he drops inappropriate bombs all the time. There are other people who support Trump whose basic premise is, don't confuse me with the truth. My mind is made up. I don't want to have to think about it anymore. And then there are those who believe in a strong man concept of how you run things. They don't want to have to think about it. Not that their mind is made up, but they don't want to have to think about it. They want to know that there's somebody who's tough and strong and purposeful and sure of what they're doing so that they just don't have to think about what's going on. Now, Psychology Today did this really extensive article, which I waded through, analyzing Trump supporters from a psychological and clinical perspective, not just those kind of personal reasons that I just gave you. This is an analysis that comes from the world of psychology medicine. And it includes things that are known as, for example, fear theory or existential threat theory. So here are some of the descriptions that Psychology Today gives for why people hang in with Trump, in spite of any evidence of wrongdoing or not being up to the job. One is a state that is described as relative deprivation, a misguided sense of entitlement. Like, I'm being deprived of things that I'm entitled to. And it's real easy to turn me against other people by saying, well, you'd have everything you deserve if they weren't around. Common explanations for Trump's popularity among non-bigoted voters has to do with economics. Some of his supporters are just angry that jobs were being lost to Mexico and China, although they often ignore the fact that some careers are being lost because of accelerating automation. But they have a sense of entitlement, and this is described as a a mental state of relative deprivation. I'm being denied something I ought to have. And it makes it easy to appeal to them on that fear theory basis. Another one is described as collective narcissism. This is an unrealistic shared belief in the greatness of one's own group. We are the true identity of this country, the in-group. And in this case, very often they're talking about white Americans perceiving themselves as being disadvantaged compared to out-groups who are getting things that they don't deserve. They're getting something we aren't, and they don't deserve it. It's a different focus than the relative deprivation theory. But collective narcissism, this is something that he appeals to quite directly, and so does Fox News and others of that ilk. Not Fox News, the network, the Fox News opinion makers. Collective narcissism. We're the ones who ought to be in control. We represent the true identity of this country. Here's another one. It's called terror management theory. People reminded of their own mortality, which comes by fear-mongering, they will more strongly defend those who share their worldviews or their national or ethnic identity. And they will act out more aggressively toward those who do not. Terror management theory. If you appeal to people's fear, they will then aggressively oppose the group that you are claiming puts them at risk. Here's another one, lack of exposure to dissimilar others. There are groups. For example, there's growing evidence, apparently, that Trump's white supporters have experienced less contact with minorities than other Americans. There was a study done in 2016 that found that the racial and ethnic isolation of whites based on zip code level is one of the strongest predictors of support for Donald Trump. So I want to say that again, because these are the kinds of psychological and societal realities. The racial and ethnic isolation of whites at the zip code level is one of the strongest predictors of support for Donald Trump. That's the epitome of identity politics, not what they're always accusing the left of, because we want to be as inclusive as possible. There are other theories in this psychology today, but these are the realities of the people who are supporting Donald Trump and who we need to understand if we are going to move back toward a real secure focus on this government working the way it was intended to and not going autocratic. This is Anita Rufus, the lovable liberal, and this is iHub Radio.